Today on Inside Politics, going on offense. Vice President Harris is on her way to Arizona, where she'll attack Republicans for the state's Civil War era abortion ban that could soon be back in effect. Now, it's an issue and a state that the Biden campaign hopes will carry them to re-election. Plus, it's the final countdown. The people of the state of New York versus Donald Trump. It kicks off on Monday. The former and perhaps future president will spend the next 2 months in court fighting criminal charges. We have new reporting on Team Trump's plans for inside that courtroom. And where does a Republican go when fighting for political survival? Mar-a-Lago, of course. Today, Speaker Mike Johnson lands in Florida, but will embracing Trump's election denial protect Johnson from the pitchforks in the House Republican caucus? I'm Audie Cornish, in for Dana Bash in Washington, and we're going to head behind the headlines and inside politics. First up, Vice President Harris has a message for the people of Arizona, where abortion rights are rolling back to the time before x-rays and antibiotics. That message is Donald Trump did this, and CNN's Priscilla Alvarez is there. Give us a little sense about how the vice president will be talking about this today.
Well, sources tell me that this is going to be an opportunity for the campaign to really hammer home what they say Donald Trump poses, the threat he poses to personal freedoms and also health care, and tying these unpopular abortion bans directly to former President Donald Trump. Now, in prepared remarks that were shared with reporters, the vice president is expected to cast this state court ruling as, quote, one of the biggest aftershocks yet from the overturning of Roe v. Wade. She's also expected to say the following, quote, Donald Trump is the architect of this healthcare crisis, and as much harm as he has already caused, a second Trump term would be even worse. If Donald Trump gets the chance, he will sign a national abortion ban. How do we know? Look at his record. Congress tried to pass a national abortion ban before in 2017, and then President Trump endorsed it. Of course, the Biden campaign sees abortion as a salient political issue that can mobilize voters, especially in the critical battleground state of Arizona. And in fact, the Biden campaign launched an ad buy this week, a seven-figure ad buy here in the state following that court ruling, putting the blame squarely on Donald Trump when it comes to the issue of abortion. And just moments ago, the vice president putting out a fundraising email on this exact issue. So you can expect that she's going to package this message of the threats that Donald Trump poses, particularly on personal freedoms and health care, all around reproductive rights, here in Tucson, Arizona, later this afternoon. Of course, a Democratic strategist tells me that ultimately this state court ruling serves as another data point in the Democratic argument against Republicans on this very issue, and one that she will be hammering home today.
All right, CNN's Priscilla Alvarez, thanks so much. I want to bring in my panel on this, CNN's Melanie Zanona, Semaphore's Dave Weigel, and Sungmin Kim of the Associated Press. Welcome to all of you. All right, so Vice President Harris has tried to make this her issue. I think she's talked about being on a national tour. She has visited with abortion clinic providers. I want to start with you, Sungmin. What does it say that she's the one who is being put forward on this message? Is she more effective than Biden in one way or another?
I think Democrats in the White House have believed she has been, just by nature, a much more effective messenger than perhaps President Biden himself. This has actually been
with particular groups or particular issues?
Just on abortion especially. I mean, this was essentially put in her portfolio immediately after the Dobbs decision in June of 22. We know that President Biden, while he has been a supporter of abortion rights, his administration has done what they say all they could to protect care in the aftermath of the Dobbs decision. President Biden personally has not always been comfortable with the idea of abortion. And yes, he is a devout Catholic. He doesn't say the word a lot. He has said in private fundraisers, he's indicated in private fundraisers a sort of discomfort with the whole issue. And Kamala Harris, being a woman, being a prosecutor who's dealt with a lot of these issues, the Biden administration, the Biden campaign feels she can, you know, prosecute this issue much more effectively than perhaps the president would.
Now, in reaction to what's happened in Arizona, you know, it's very interesting because basically when they passed this bill, it was always baked in that this law from 1864 could come to the forefront. So everybody who voted for it knew this provision was buried in there. So that means there's a ton of tape of them talking about it, lobbying for it. Here's an example of then gubernatorial candidate Carrie Lake back in 2022.
I'm incredibly thrilled that we are going to have a great law that's already on the books. I believe it's ARS 133603. So it will prohibit abortion in Arizona except to save the life of a mother.
So now she's running for Senate, and of course, and she wants to appeal this law, and Democrats are already pointing out on social media sort of her past comments. Ruben Gallego, a Democrat who's running against her for Senate, is among those. But specifically, Dave, he says no amount of backpedaling will make us forget. Will this come off as backpedaling to voters?
Well, I think it already has, and the politics of this within the state are not going her way, because if you're a Republican, if you're a Republican who believes in this and wanted to get rid of Roe, wanted the state to ban abortion, one, you knew this is on the books for a long time. I interviewed the current Attorney General, which was running 3 years ago, and she said this might happen. And two, why would you vote for a bill that waters this down? They already tried this week. The Speaker of the House is running for Congress in a safe conservative district. Is it in his interest to undermine something that that the pro-life movement just won, a generational, multi-generational
victory?
Right,
they have victory? Momentum.
Right. And so you're starting to see the separation. Carrie Lake is part of this. Donald Trump is part of this on one side. Separation from Republicans who are very transactional in how they handle this, and Republicans who believed it. And Donald Trump has stumbled on this multiple ways this week. I think Lake has started to, too. But Trump, even by saying that he endorses referendums in states, which Blake is going to have to take a position on.
Yeah.
He angered a lot of people in the pro-life movement who say, this is a issue of human life. This is not an issue that you can vote on to referendum.
Let me jump in there. You're bringing up referendums because the abortion rights activists are already collecting signatures in Arizona to put a ballot referendum protecting abortion out there for November. But they join a long list of states who are doing this, including Florida, Maryland, Nevada, New York. Melanie, is this starting to actually shift the conversation about what's possible for, let's say, Democrats in November?
Yeah, absolutely. And talking to Democratic sources on Capitol Hill, they see these ballot initiatives as a potential to juice turnout, particularly among some of these demographics who might sit out, who might not be enthusiastic to vote for Biden, but they will get out for these ballot initiatives. And Democrats are really expanding their battleground map because of it.
I want to add the Cook Political Report actually has, when we looked at their list of toss-up districts, there were a number of states, Arizona, New York included, where lawmakers may have to deal with a ballot referendum.
Yeah, and some of those states that you're throwing up there, those are where the path to the majority really runs. And in talking to Republicans, oftentimes they will say things like, well, we just have a messaging problem and we just need to message better. But what's happening in Arizona is a perfect example. It's not the message that's unpopular, it's the policy itself. And this policy was because Roe v. Wade was overturned.
But is inadvertently, Sung Kim, is the message turning into, we'll support bans of 15 weeks? Do you know what I mean? Like right now in Arizona, they're trying to create a choice that says, we'll repeal this law from 1864, and instead we'll have this restriction, this abortion ban, up to 15 weeks, which to me says you're still somehow allowing for abortion.
Right, right.
Like, what is the message that's starting to coalesce?
I mean, that's a really good question, because if you look at the referendum that Arizona's are trying to put before voters in November, that looks at protecting abortion until viability, which is much further along than 15 weeks. It's about 24 weeks when a fetus is considered viable, especially in this context. So I think, you know, what that says to perhaps voters in Arizona is that the Republican Party is still a party that largely wants to restrict access to the procedure, regardless of whether it's this 1864 law that's on the books, or it, you know, that will be on the books in a matter of days, or this 15-week ban, which is why Republican strategists, especially looking at voters in Arizona, they're really hoping that if this referendum is on the ballot, that voters can kind of make a dual decision. You know, they might support this referendum, but maybe they support Donald Trump at the top of the ticket because issues like the border and the economy are more important to them.
Okay, but Dave, if this is about turnout, getting people excited, and this there's no message here, right, that they're still fighting, how do you hold on to the energy on the right, those abortion, anti-abortion activists, while still telling them, well, pump the brakes, we don't want to go that far?
No, it's a quandary the Trump campaign hasn't figured out yet. And one thing that Democrats have been talking about, I think they'll talk more about it in Arizona today, next week, throughout the election, it's not just up to the states. There are a lot of policies that Trump put in place in office when he had conservative lawyers in the DOJ and HHS that they expect him to bring back, that they're on record saying he's going to bring back. Biden created, before and after the fall of Roe, a reproductive rights task force, conservatives, the Heritage Foundation, want that to get rid of that and create a pro-life task force.
The Biden message has become more pointed. Trump did this, taking away your rights, and the Republican message has become sort of messier. Melanie, I want to leave it to you. What does this mean for issues like migrants and crime? I mean, all of a sudden, Kamala Harris can march right up to the border, right, be in a border state, when a few months ago it would not have flown the same way.
Right. It's really interesting in Arizona because now abortion and immigration, it's probably going to be the two biggest issues in November broadly. You're seeing it most impacted in Arizona. So that's really becoming ground zero for both of these issues.
And instead of what they wanted.
Right, exactly. So you're going to see that Republicans are going to try to seize on the border issue, Democrats seizing on abortion. But just like we're talking about, Republicans need to address abortion, Democrats feel like they also need to address the border issue and say what they would do on immigration, also laying out legal pathways to citizenship as they're talking about trying to secure the border. So it's an issue that they're definitely going to have to wrestle with.
All right. Well, stay with us because we're going to be talking about Donald Trump, who may be out of legal tricks and out of time. Jury selection in his hush money trial begins in just 3 days. We're going to take a closer look at what we can expect on Monday in New York.
This podcast is supported by Sleep Number. Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs, so you can choose what's right for each of you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores? Sleep Number does that. Only Sleep Number Smart Beds let you each choose your ideal comfort and support, your Sleep Number setting. Sleep Number Smart Beds learn how you sleep and provide personalized insights to help you sleep better. All Sleep Number smart beds feature cooling, pressure-relieving comfort layers for soothing sleep throughout the night. Temperature-balancing bedding is designed to move heat and moisture away when you're hot. When you're cool, they hold their energy to help warm you. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Dr. Sanjay Gupta, CNN's chief medical correspondent. This week on Chasing Life...
I'm a health reporter and have been for 15 years. And even I feel overwhelmed by some of the things I read about the stuff we're eating.
My colleague Meg Terrell wanted to take a deep dive into something you've probably heard a lot about recently. Ultra-processed foods. There is a lot to learn there, some fascinating stuff, and some of it is probably going to change the way you shop. Listen to Chasing Life, wherever you get your podcasts.
After trying every legal option out there to delay his New York hush money case, the former president's first criminal trial is just 3 days away. This is an extraordinary moment in U.S. history. A former president and presumptive presidential nominee is about to sit in court 4 days a week as a criminal defendant, all for allegedly covering up hush money payments to an adult film star before the 2016 election. Now, the judge says that the trial could last for 2 months. Now, Trump will have to be in court for all of it. And what happens there could define the presidential election and who ultimately ends up in the Oval Office next year. So CNN's chief legal correspondent Paula Reed is joining us now, along again with Sungmin and David. Thanks for staying with us. So first, remind us which case this is. I'm not going to lie. There's so many. So what about this particular one should we be looking out for?
So it's so funny. Even in this case, it's often referred to as the hush money case. But the district attorney's office doesn't like that. They're trying to rebrand it as the 2016 election interference case.
Yeah.
But at the heart of this case is this agreement, this hush money payment that was made to Stormy Daniels to keep quiet about her affair with then candidate Trump. Now, there's nothing wrong with paying someone to keep quiet about a relationship that you had with them.
But a little weird, but yeah.
It's not something that, but for the grace of God, right? Okay, so moving on from that, the case is focused on how Michael Cohen was reimbursed for facilitating that hush money payment. So the charges are about falsifying business records. That's the alleged crime here. But people are actually mostly familiar.
With campaign funds or just corporate funds?
With his own funds.
Okay.
Now, to make it even more complicated, the argument is that these business records were falsified in an effort to interfere with the election. In order to charge this as a felony, you have to argue that these were falsified in furtherance of another crime, even though that crime is not charged and does not have to be proven. So it's a complicated case, but at a high level, this is about falsifying business records related to that hush money payment ahead of the 2016 election.
All right. In terms of witnesses, who might we expect to see in court?
a lot of familiar faces, potentially Michael Cohen, who is at the center of this, though a problematic witness given his continued comments about the former president, his disdain for him. But he's at the center of this. Stormy Daniels could potentially be called. David Pecker, the former head of AMI, which was helping to facilitate hush money payments to help Trump's chances in the election, to suppress negative stories. Now, there's also campaign officials who we know also worked in the White House, Kellyanne Conway, Hope Hicks. So these are some folks that we could see on the witness stand throughout the course of this trial.
All right, so I want to bring in the group here because we were just sort of joking about, like, which one is this? And it is interesting. Sarah Longwell, who's a Republican pollster, full disclosure, self-described never Trumper. She was saying that when she was talking to voters, that they kind of look at this case a little bit differently.
Just the word porn star, which you're going to hear over and over again, is just the kind of thing that makes people laugh it off as not serious, even though this is about, you know, corporate checks being passed and trying to hide things before an election so it didn't get out. Even though that's what it's about, like, it's the voters are going to interpret this one more, I think, a little bit more through Trump's frame as this is them trying to get me on something silly than they would something like the January 6th case mm-hmm. or the documents case, where when they are taken singularly, seem more serious to voters than this one does.
Dave, I want to put this question to you because, and get this out of the way, because I think she's got a point. You say porn star and people all of a sudden mm-hmm. it's something different. How are you hearing it as you're out reporting?
Well, the important thing for Republicans is they've already built over years a superstructure for everything Trump is accused of, everything he's in court for, which is the deep state is trying to take out Donald Trump. And it's true for their base that that is how everything is handled. Compare this to 2016. You could find Democrats saying, I'm going to vote for Hillary Clinton, but I have my concerns about how she handled her email. You cannot find that in the Republican Party. They will say everything he's accused of is a ruse, and they're doing this because they can't beat him fairly. Look at the polls. That, I think, does obscure the polls, which say most people, Reuters, Ipsos last week, Politico, everyone who polls this finds most voters, most independents, don't like the idea of what Trump is accused of and don't like the idea of him being convicted.
Yes,
and this is relevant because this is the one he might be convicted for the election.
Most voters thinking that Trump charges are serious as
right.
well. I mean, I want to ask one other thing. Trump has proved that he can wield court appearances, right, and create a kind of spectacle with them. So Sungmin, what does that mean for what is going to be this kind of daily case? Do you think that there's more spectacle to come? And if so, what does the Biden White House, if anything, do about it?
Right. I mean, we are in a very historic moment here next week. So it's going to consume a lot of public oxygen, a lot of the political oxygen. This will be asked about basically everywhere you go, whether it's at the whether it's on Capitol Hill or at the White House or on the campaign trail. But what the Biden campaign is going to do is really kind of steer focus away from that. When they've tried to make the contrast with Donald Trump, they actually haven't talk too much about his specific legal troubles. They like to make the contrast with what he would do in office if
right.
he's elected.
Because it also plays into the deep state concern.
Very much, right. very much
yeah.
so. So next week, they're going to really focus on tax issues. Biden's traveling to Pennsylvania, obviously a key state in November. So you're going to hear a lot of that. It might not get the attention.
I think that's on purpose. I'm not going to make a judgment here. But Paul, I want you to have the last word because more than 500 Manhattanites have gotten notices to appear in the criminal court. They've got to select 12. Trump has always made a lot of hay about who's on juries, where the jurisdiction is, that somehow means something. But how should we think about what's happening in New York?
It's a daunting process to try to whittle this group down to a group of 12 impartial jurors and then some alternates.
Impartial about, like, the world's most famous person.
Exactly. Yeah. And it can't be argued that he is likely at a disadvantage here in terms of the fact that he is the most famous person in the world. Most people are familiar with this. And there is an anti-Trump sentiment, right, within this jury pool. It probably skews anti-Trump, even though you'll find people who did vote for him and continue to support him. So they're going to go
through
this
process. And it only takes one. Right? In
exactly,
a jury
yes.
to and change things.
Exactly. And I think that it's going to take a couple days to go through 100 people at a time and whittle them down. But the defense, look, they are at a disadvantage. Each side gets 10 preemptive challenges. But if you're already dealing with a pool that is slightly skewed against your client, that's a disadvantage. But the judge has found that, look, this is not going to prevent you from getting a fair trial here. But I think it is an open question about whether there will definitively be a conviction. And that's not based on the feelings or opinions of the jury pool.
Right,
that's based on the facts
that a felony has been
structure
committed.
Of the case. Yeah.
Well, we're going to be talking about this a lot for days and days and days over the next few months. Please watch CNN for special live coverage of the Trump hush money trial. You can actually see it Monday at 10 a.m. Eastern right here on CNN and also on streaming on Max. Now ahead, Donald Trump will host embattled Speaker Mike Johnson in Florida later today as the GOP-led House swirls in turmoil. It's the buildup before the kiss-up. Later today, House Speaker Mike Johnson will make a joint appearance with Donald Trump at Mar-a-Lago. They'll be pushing fears of illegal voting by non-citizens, despite little evidence that that's an issue. But it may be Trump's priority. House Speaker Johnson, it's probably his own job security that's important to him, as fellow Republican Marjorie Taylor Greene continues her campaign to oust him. So we're going to bring in two great reporters to talk about this. CNN's Lauren Fox on Capitol Hill. Also CNN's Kristen Holmes is in West Palm Beach, Florida. Lauren, I want to start with you. Speaker Johnson travels to Florida. He's going to stand side by side with Trump, but it's kind of a delicate time for him to do so, right?
Yeah, it's a delicate time, perhaps, Adi, but perhaps it's also the best time for him to do this, as there are a lot of questions swirling around whether or not he is going to continue to keep his speaker's gavel as he continues to try to pass several priorities in the next couple of weeks. What we are seeing today is this fight over FISA, the Federal Intelligence Surveillance Act renewal, happening on Capitol Hill. And just a few hours ago, even before this vote started, you saw Marjorie Taylor Greene. You can see her there on the bottom left of your screen with Speaker Mike Johnson. They had this very lengthy back and forth. It's unclear precisely what they were talking about, but I asked Johnson about it later and said, you know, was she applying pressure to you? What was she trying to ask for? And he said that they usually agree in terms of conservative priorities, but that they sometimes disagree about the strategy and the best way to implement their policy ideas. And obviously, this has been something that's been going on for the last several weeks. And it's just not clear if Marjorie Taylor Greene is going to try to bring and force this effort to oust Speaker Mike Johnson. At any time she could do so, that is part of the reason that Johnson sort of needs this backup, this moment, this photo op of him and Donald Trump, someone who still has a stranglehold on the conservatives here on Capitol Hill. So that is what you are going to see play out today. He was asked specifically, Johnson was, whether or not he was going to ask Donald Trump for advice about this question of his ousting. Here's what he said.
Are you planning on speaking with President Trump about the motion to vacate?
I don't ever comment on my private conversations with President Trump, but I'm looking forward to going to Florida and spending some time.
Interestingly, Mike Johnson also would not say when or how Ukraine aid is going to pass on the floor. That's another issue that Donald Trump has been railing against, and obviously something we're going to be keeping a close eye on because it could have a huge impact, Adi, on whether or not he's able to keep his job.
Kristen Holmes, I want to ask you, we know what Mike Johnson wants out of this, but what's in it for Trump?
I mean, well, Trump is given an opportunity to talk about how the 2020 election was stolen or how election systems are rigged. He's going to take it, particularly give some gravitas to the situation to have two top Republicans, really the top two Republicans right now, to stand side by side in their first press conference and talk about it. Now, I do want to talk a little bit about what exactly they are saying, because one of the big things that they're going to talk about is this idea of non-citizens voting. They say they're going to bring attention to state proposals and lawsuits that might make that an issue. As you said, there is no indication it is an issue anywhere. And I want to be very clear, there is currently a federal law banning non-citizens from voting in federal elections, which are the only elections that these two men really are focusing on at this time. However, it has become somewhat of a rallying cry for Republicans. Donald Trump himself has gone far enough as saying that Democrats want undocumented immigrants crossing the border in order to help them in the 2024 elections. Now, there are some nuances here. There are some cities and some states that are allowing non-citizens to vote in very particular local elections, one of those being school board elections, just so you have an idea. But there is no indication that this is a widespread issue.
All right, Kristen, thanks so much. You know, bringing back my panel here, what I'm interested in is what they're not talking about, Ukraine aid, or just about anything else. So, Melanie, help us understand how is this helpful to Johnson, other than maybe protective?
Yeah.
Does it help with any of the array of things he's trying to pass?
So I've actually been told that some allies to Johnson have counseled him to try to keep Trump in the loop on anything he plans to do on Ukraine, and that they really want Trump's buy-in, because I think there is a recognition here that Trump can make or break not only the legislation, but also Mike Johnson's speakership. Now, it's an open question whether Trump can get behind anything. Johnson has floated the idea of turning the aid into a loan, which is something Trump has previously express support for, so we'll see. But Johnson is treading very carefully here on all of these issues that we're talking about.
I feel like there's a timer over Speaker Johnson's office, right? Like a countdown timer.
Right.
What's your sense of how this can help him against someone like a Marjorie Taylor Greene, who is very well known for sort of having Trump's ear, or at least having hers?
Right. Well, I mean, having Johnson and Trump stand side by side, I think is the hope is that even with someone like Marjorie Taylor Greene, hanging this, the threat of a motion to vacate over Speaker Johnson's head, that Trump is ultimately the one in charge here. Maybe he can counsel her away from making that decision, because I think we know that having another leadership fight in this election year would be absolute chaos for the Republican Party. And most Republicans, especially in election year, do not want that. Donald Trump doesn't want that. He knows this is not going to be helpful to his reelection chances. So even just that visual of those two men standing side by side, projecting that unity, could be helpful to Johnson at the end of the day.
Dave, last word to you. Is there any incentive to pass anything, right? Like, does Donald Trump want a productive Congress?
No, in the Senate, we're seeing that any progress towards some sort of tax deal by the end of the year is being killed because Republicans want Donald Trump to win. There are not many incentives for anything getting done. From Johnson's perspective, though, he's going to keep getting embarrassed by something or other. He's lost a lot of conservatives like Green over the Hanley spending bills. But next week, we're going to see the Mayorkas impeachment effort probably die in the Senate. Not 100% sure yet. Marjorie Taylor Greene said she's going to bring it back up in the House if it fails. So his calendar, every time they're in session, there is going to be something that he loses on that irritates maybe the entertainment wing of the party, you could call it. The people on talk radio, online, who want wins and are angry this guy can't deliver them.
Feels like watching someone step on a rake over and over again. Next, new reporting on how Trump's economic plan for a second term could send the U.S. into a recession. We're going to break down the numbers for you.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
The Biden administration announced another round of student loan forgiveness this morning. This time, it's $7.4 billion in debt for 277,000 borrowers. Now, the Supreme Court blocked a much broader Biden effort on student debt. But as Election Day nears, the administration has ramped up its efforts to wipe clear the debt of millions of Americans. And the White House says in total, its efforts have now helped 4.3 million people. Now, we want to take a look today at one of the many ways that this election could impact your life, especially economically. So we're also having new reporting about Donald Trump's economic policies, specifically tariffs and what they could do to the economy. Trump has floated a 10% across the board tariff on imports from anywhere and an even bigger 60% tariff on all goods coming from China. Now, that's on top of a 100% tariff on foreign cars. In a worst-case scenario, some economists fear that those plans could trigger a recession. CNN's Matt Egan is here with his new reporting. Okay, Matt, help us square this. What are you seeing?
Well, Audie, remember, Trump loves tariffs so much that he dubbed himself the Tariff Man. And he's made clear that if he wins in November, the Tariff Man sequel will be even bigger than the original. Now, remember, a tariff is a tax on imported goods, and he's floated this 60% tariff on imports from China. So that means if you were buying, let's say, a Chinese-made bicycle or sneakers, you'd be paying a lot more. And these plans are not sitting well with some economists, who are warning that this could really do some damage here. Now, Moody's told CNN that Trump's trade policies would kill 675,000 jobs if they were enacted, that they would shrink GDP, they would lift the unemployment rate, and they would also make inflation worse. And that's even if Trump used the new revenue from these tariffs to fund tax cuts. Now, this is not just coming from Moody's. Goldman Sachs warned its clients as well that Trump's tariffs could lift inflation and slow GDP. I talked to an economist from the right-leaning Tax Foundation who told me that this is just a bad policy, and it's likely the worst and most damaging part of Trump's economic agenda. Now, we should note there is a lot of uncertainty here, right? We don't know how much of Trump's trade proposals are just threats, how much of this is bluster or real. We also don't really know how other countries would respond, but there's no reason to think that they would take this lying down, especially not China. And listen, timing is important, right? Tariffs are already high. Inflation is already high. This does seem like a risky time to make them even higher.
So how much bigger are these proposals compared to the tariffs that President Biden actually kept on, right, from the Trump era on Chinese goods? Give us a sense of the scale here.
Well, it is telling that those tariffs remain in place. Because remember, this is a White House that is searching for ways to show that they are attacking inflation. And one way to lower the cost of goods would be to lower some of these tariffs. But that has not happened. For the large part, these Trump-era tariffs, they remain intact. And that's because tariffs have become a bipartisan tool. Trump does have legitimate gripes here when it comes to China and trade. We hear from Democrats and business leaders who are also concerned about China's alleged intellectual property theft, dumping goods at artificially low prices. These are very bipartisan concerns. And one expert told me that, listen, trade has become toxic to both parties. And Audi, there's no reason to think that that's going to change no matter who wins the election in November. The question is whether or not tariffs are going to go even higher. And that is certainly what the Trump campaign is signaling.
All right, Matt Egan, thank you.
Thanks.
And coming up, RFK Jr., the most insider outsider, seems to be winning over swing voters in key states. We're going to hear from voters in Michigan who say they plan to flip from Biden to Kennedy. The presidential election isn't just between Joe Biden and Donald Trump. The threat of an independent candidate, Robert F. Kennedy Jr., is actually posed to both candidates, and he's in double digits in most national polls. And I want to hear from you. I want you to hear directly from a group of swing voters in Pennsylvania, because they flipped from Trump in 2016 to Biden in 2020, and so they're very much up for grabs. Four of the six in the group said they'd pick Kennedy over Biden and Trump.
Neither of them is a viable candidate. I'd almost just roll the dice with Kennedy and just see what would happen.
He has a lot of attributes of Robert and John F. Kennedy. So I feel that he would be the best choice out of the five there.
I'm kind of really tired of Biden, and I'm not going to vote for Trump. So to me, it would be put someone new in there. Let's come up with some new ideas.
Our thanks to Engage Us and Seiko for that group. My panel is back with me. I tend to think of third party candidates as people who have like a movement or policy ideas behind them, whereas this is a little bit of like, well, not one of those dudes. So, and what have you been learning about what the curiosity is for these candidates?
Right,
voters?
Right. Well, for an AP poll story this week, I talked to a lot of voters, and a lot of these voters are very disenchanted with both Biden and Trump. So at a minimum, there is a curiosity among voters saying, you know, they don't want to support Trump again. They're unhappy with what President Biden has done in office. So they at least want to know more about RFK. And I think we're still collecting the data on who this hurts more, Biden or Trump, who RFK hurts more in a general election contest. But I do think there is that appeal of the Kennedy name. You know, people don't know
heard the attributes of Robert in it.
Exactly.
The attribute sounded like the name Kennedy. David, I want to ask you, because we know that there was an RFK Jr. campaign staffer who was actually fired because she was caught telling voters that her number one priority was to prevent a Biden victory. Why was this a significant moment?
Well, it was found by a Democrat, an independent Democrat working on his own, who just doesn't like Kennedy's trying to undermine him, and the Democratic Party elevated it. The Democrats have a playbook, they've used it in a couple of elections, sometimes not successfully, of taking a third-party candidate who's not very well-defined and emphasizing all of his right-wing views to convince Democrat, those kind of voters, really, people who
but
might have voted for Biden pass,
just
to come back
dead
on board.
Convinced that yeah. third party takes from Democrats.
That not everyone who's voting for Kennedy or says they would is going to vote Democratic, but some will. And they convince the soft voter who just doesn't like the way things are going, but doesn't want Trump back. No, this is actually a way to get Trump back. That is their entire game plan. Everything they're doing. This is Liz Smith and a couple people at the DNC doing this. All their opposition research at the moment about Kennedy is emphasizing right-wing things he has endorsed. Because if you look at his paid media so far, including the Super Bowl ad, I have totally no content.
Yes.
They are just that his name is Kennedy, he's Kennedy, he's not Donald Trump and Joe Biden. They want to say, yeah. yes, and he is
so
very right-wing.
That I think is the yeah. Kennedy family was actually quite upset.
Very
in the
much
way,
so.
And they found
yeah.
in their polling that when people hear the Kennedys don't support him, that alone gets people to move off of him. And
oh,
that, so they're very confident that works.
So I want to follow up on something you said, though, because mm-hmm. Donald Trump has actually, I think, made some comments on Truth Social mm-hmm. About RFK Jr., where he is essentially calling him radical left.
RFK Jr. is, as you know, the most radical left candidate in the race. He's more so than the Green Party. He's more so than even crooked Joe Biden. If I were a Democrat, I'd vote for RFK Jr. every single time over Biden.
Okay. Melanie, I don't want to turn this into some sort of 3D chess situation. Like
yeah,
Trump is
right.
saying this and they're saying that. So when you hear that, what comes to mind?
Well, listen, when you talk to Trump allies and Trump's campaign, they're not so sure that this is a clear-cut spoiler for Biden. They're a little skeptical, a little worried.
Yeah, because there's a big anti-vax contingent, right?
Anti-vax,
that's how he came up.
He has said some things that appeal more to the MAGA base. He's been sympathetic to January 6th defenders and rioters. And so they're not entirely sure. And it is a risk to try to elevate him and try to for Trump anyway. But you see, Trump can't always help himself when he says he would be good. He's in his Truth Social post, he said he would be good for the MAGA movement and that he loves that he's running. So Trump clearly feels like this is potentially a win for him. But we haven't just seen evidence just yet that Republicans are taking this as serious of a threat as the Democratic Party is.
And we'd know because they'd spend money, right? I mean, is that how we have to think about
yeah.
it?
And their overall theory is that Donald Trump has never gotten more than 50% of the vote, that the double haters that we heard a lot about in 2016 are hearing more about now. That
call them negative partisans.
That's true.
But
that's
double
true.
Haters
but that
is
those,
catching on.
Yeah. That those voters, any vote that's not for Biden is great. It's off the board. That is their overall theory, and they're being kind of cautious about this. They're trying to elevate in lower ways more obvious left-wing threats to Biden, like Cornel West, like Jill Stein, emphasizing from Jill Stein's perspective, and I talked to her about this, that she wants to talk about how Joe Biden's drilling more than Donald Trump did, or right. allowing more, I should say, not personally.
But
allowing
climate
more
change,
drilling.
Gaza, yeah. there's a number of sort of soft spots.
They're more confident in elevating those voices and saying, hey, if you're a left-wing Democrat in Madison or in Ann Arbor, please pay attention to Cornel West and Jill Stein, because that worked for them in 2016. Kennedy's more of an X factor.
All right. Well, thank you to the group for talking with me today. I had a lot of fun. I appreciate it. Mm-hmm. And if you like talking about politics, I do too. Thanks for joining Inside Politics. CNN News Central starts after the break. Before you go, I just want to invite you to listen to my podcast, The Assignment. We're going to be talking this weekend with the movie director Alex Garland about his new film, The Civil War, which is about partisanship, the threat of U.S. divisions. You can get new episodes of the show wherever you get your podcasts. Thanks so much.
When you work next level. And when you play next level. And when it's time to sleep, Sleep Number smart beds are designed to embrace your uniqueness, providing you with high-quality sleep every night. Sleep next level. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, the Queen Sleep Number C4 smart bed is only $1,599. Save $300 for a limited time, only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com. Prices higher in Alaska and Hawaii. Quality sleep is essential, and that's why the Sleep Number smart bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. So you can choose what's right for you whenever you like. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature. Quiets their snores. Sleep Number does that. Sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on Sleep Number limited edition smart beds for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at Sleep Number stores or sleepnumber.com.